Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 5th of October. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And I'm Charles Archer.
And as always, it's great to have you with us. Rolling into Q4 now, quarter four already. Where's the year gone, guys? Markets are perking up. Sentiment seems to be shifting. What a week it's been. Storm Amy's battering the UK now. I mean, how's things?
Well, we've had a big storm. It's a big yellow thing in the sky. That's and no
sun
wind.
Storm. A solar
we've
storm.
We've had constant 30 degrees centigrade for a week, so it's been terrible.
Yeah. Markets, in general, what are we thinking?
Risk on.
What?
Risk on.
Risk on.
Everybody's thinking these things can actually go up and not just go sideways or down.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm willing to put my money in it. And I also think that we've got a situation where people are maybe running is a bit harsh, but moving away from the US dollar. So that means that the British investments, if you like, are going to catch a bit. And that's what we're starting to see, I think.
If you compare this year to 2 years ago, or even last year, how many stocks have we seen do 100% in a day?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you kind of lose count, don't you?
We saw a few do 400% this week alone. You know, UK oil and gas. I mean, we'll talk about that more later. But yeah, we're seeing stocks, even today, if I look on SharePad and sort by the biggest mover, Wildcat Petroleum is sat around 0.14. It's 108% up. We've got a few doing 25, 30% as well following that. So absolutely, we're seeing this movement of money into the markets. All it needs is a few buys and it punches through, doesn't it? It moves the stock very, very quickly. So let's have a quick look at some of the news stories that have dominated this week. Top of the agenda again, Donald Trump has unveiled this 20-point peace proposal for Gaza, aiming at securing long-term settlement between Israel and the Palestinians. World leaders have cautiously welcomed the framework, with most major powers backing it, though Iran remains a key holdout. The big question now is whether Hamas will accept or reject the deal and what that means for regional stability to going forward. So what do we think are the chances of some sort of peace in the Middle East, in Palestine and the Gazans and Hamas?
Well, I think the question is, are you going to get peace or are you going to get a ceasefire that lasts a bit and then it breaks down? I mean, it depends how far back you want to go historically, but that area of the Middle East has been at war for 1,000 years or more, you know? And I think, can you create a lasting peace in that area where there are people there, you know, living in Gaza now whose entire families have been literally blown to shreds by Israel, who will never, ever be able to be, you know, friends with the Israelis, and vice versa. You've got people living in who were living in Palestine and being forced off by Israel. I don't think there's a good side here. It's the first thing. I'm not sure that any peace out there is going to be permanent. That's a really sad, horrible thing to say, but I'm not sure how it can be. What are your thoughts, Kev?
Yeah, have you got 5 hours?
Indeed.
We can have a discussion about the overall. If we think sort of a 20-piece peace process that Netanyahu quite obviously didn't want, by the look on his face, and basically he's going to be struggling to keep his government together. You know, there's a play on a play on a play on a play going on here, because Netanyahu wants to keep the whole thing going, because otherwise he could be under some serious charges himself. They've tried to now some stuff forward to pardon him so that he doesn't have to just keep pushing on forward and isn't going to be at the behest of the extremely right-wing people in his government or coalition that he's put together for this war. But that's only one aspect. I mean, the human aspect, as you pointed out, Charles, is just absolutely bizarre. How do they expect that, you know, families having been obliterated, that people aren't going to be sort of sour and want revenge? It's, and not just the people in Gaza, people in the West Bank, millions and millions and millions of Palestinians all over the world. Yeah, it's absolutely bizarre. I don't condone terrorist actions that they took, but there is a proportionate amount of violence, if you like, that needed to occur, and it's gone way over the top, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Gaza's been ethnically cleansed. Of this, there is absolutely no doubt. Nobody could argue that. We'll look back in 10, 20 years and go, how did we let this happen? How did we let this happen? Without somebody else stepping in? Well, it seems that Israel is, to a large degree, and has to a large degree, been controlling the US in terms of what the US does or doesn't say. And it's scary bananas, the whole thing. Absolutely scary bananas. So that is a very short synopsis, obviously, but
yeah,
I have view on both sides. But, you know, from a purely human perspective, the way that things have been dealt with is obscene.
Agreed. And I think a lot of this is down to an ego as well. It's also down to Trump wanting this, chasing this Nobel Peace Prize, which he's been touted as, you know what I mean? He's talked about fixing the problems between Pakistan and India in the past. He said, yeah, he can make a peace deal. Obviously, he's struggling along with Russia and Ukraine. But if he pulls this off, I think that he'll be a candidate for that. And he's always made it. He's made it very clear he wants that award and that accolade.
Yeah, the Israeli thing really is... Though, as you said, Charles, it's been going on for 1,000 years plus. The real issue has been going on for about 150 years in Zionism. You know, Zionism wasn't a thing until 150 years ago. And then it was created, it moved forward, it got huge impetus from what happened in the First World War, then even more impetus from what happened to the Jews in the Second World War. And, you know, here we are today. It's not happened because of October the 7th, let's be honest. Yeah.
And then we saw a backlash against them, didn't we, yesterday in Manchester, the synagogue there. Unfortunately, two people died. Attacker was named by police as Jihad al-Shami, UK citizen of Syrian descent. There's been a big backlash in the not only in the Palestinian community around Manchester, but obviously in the Jewish community. Sad scenes there. And then obviously we also saw the news that Starmer went mentioned that there's potentially that they will only unveil some digital IDs as well, that everybody has to have effectively a digital passport going forward, mainly to stop illegal working. But what do we make of sort of putting that into place? They talked about it 14 years ago under Blair leadership, having some sort of digital ID there. But what are the chances of that happening and enforcing that and putting that into place, do we think?
I think they'll try to. I mean, my basic issue with it is that if you look at the government's use of our data or any private company's use of our data in general, has anything not been hacked at some point? You know, so if you have a situation where your ID is on your phone and your personal identification can be stolen if someone steals your phone, then I think it'll be a disaster. I mean, in terms of government control, it's not a good idea. We have passports and national insurance numbers. We have driving licenses. I'm aware there are digital IDs in other countries around the world. I just don't think it's needed in the UK. And my suspicion is, when you look at illegal immigration into this country, they're going to introduce digital ID and they're going to say this will be what solves the illegal immigration problem. But it's nonsense, because, you know, the people who are immigrating illegally into the country throw their ID documents away. I'm against it. I think it's the government overreach in action, right? Basically is what it feels like. I was in Nando's a couple of weeks ago, right? And I wanted a Coke. And it's in unlimited refills if you want a sugary Coke. And there's a fucking sticker on the machine that says you may only have one glass and then you can't refill it with normal Coke. It has to be zero sugar. I ignored that because
really?
I didn't. Yeah,
I've
never
seen that. I knew that it was the old, you know, the bottomless or, you know, refills.
Yeah,
or
so you can have one. You can't have bottomless.
So they actually warn you saying that it's too much sugar content, effectively.
It's the insane. Yeah, you know, we were saying nanny state. I think that basically is we just have politicians who feel like they can just tell us what we can do at any point. And I guess it's the same with the tax system. I mean, the amount of tax you spent that we are forced to pay in the UK, and they just want more and more and more, getting blood out of the stone. And I think this is my biggest thing with the digital ID. This country has no money. So you want to spend, I don't care how much they say, you know, it'll run into the billions because government spending always does. If you want to take a couple of billion and issue digital ID, when we're literally looking, you know, to have even more tax rises. No, we have bigger things to spend money on right now. Yeah. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Okay, I think that's enough news and politics. But yeah, let's have a look at the market movers and shakers, and then we can talk.
But
more
regarding
about
the markets, sorry for interrupting you, Phil. But regarding the markets, is that any different than nanny state than them closing the buy button on some of these stocks,
oh,
right? Because this really frustrates the living daylight out of me. How can we say that that is a good market and that you're protecting the investor if you close the buy button? It beggars belief.
If the equity is listed and publicly tradable, they shouldn't shut it off, basically. It's the big one. And they did it with GameStop back in 2021. And, you know, that you can argue a toss about that for, you know, forever. But basically, if you look at like Defence Holdings or Tiger Royalties or various others that where the buy button's been closed off, you create the decision. The first thing is Interactive Investor, AJ Bell, and various others who do it. They don't tell you who's made the decision or why the decision has been made. That's the first thing. So you can't even, you don't even know why they've done it. And then the second is by turning off that buy button, you create selling pressure because people can only close positions, right? But more than that, again, it is the nanny state. It's if you are able to open a broking account. And I think there is an argument to be made that until you're 21, there should be training wheels on it. But if you are able to open a broking account, you should be able to trade whatever the hell you want. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I agree. 100% agree. I just, it's, is it them protecting their own book? In other words, that they hold too much of one stock or whatever, or what? There is a reason for them doing it themselves, not to protect themselves, not to protect you as an investor. I don't believe this for one second.
Interesting, isn't it? I mean, somebody actually, I don't know whether, Charles, maybe you can answer this. Somebody put a post on X. I mean, it may have been proven as fake in the end, but basically saying that he tried to open an IG account to trade with a Defence Holdings. And one of the compliance teams had reached out to him on email saying, because he'd searched for alert before his account had been authorized. And they said, "Are you a member of the British Royal British Legion or something like that?" They were doing like black background KYR, know your KYC checks on this guy. And it was on it. And I'm like, dude. And then I think someone said it's been proven to be fake. But I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if people are stooping so low now.
Well, no, like as you know, I freelance with IG, so I can't speak for them as a company, but I would say I'd venture that no company would ever, ever, ever do that. They're the most insane thing you could possibly do. But this is the thing. I mean, what I suspect is happening, right? So it's easy. You want to offer these equities. So like Defence Holdings is a good example because it's been one of the most traded stocks in the UK for the past few weeks because of the rise. It's come down a bit. I think it will go back up. But that's neither here nor there for the purpose of this conversation. So they'll take the liquidity and they'll charge you, you'll pay money and they'll get your business while it suits them. And then when that volume goes higher and it gets more complex, you can shut that buy side down. You can blame it on client protection, right? But actually, it costs more money and increases their risk basis when you're dealing with an increased volume, highly complex, illiquid penny stock. So it creates this incentive structure where platforms profit from marketing full market access, but you retreat to selective restrictions when it suits their business model. And the key thing for me, right, like to be like completely clear, if they don't want exposure to the small cap risk with these assets, that's fine, right? Just don't offer the security, either buy or sell. Or say, okay, we've decided we don't want to offer this one at all. That's fine. You can run your business the way you want to. What's not fine is making it tradable. So loads of people on your platform buy the stock and then change it to close only. So those people effectively are forced to sell. Or eventually, do you have no buying pressure? And then, when you say the IPO markets are struggling, the UK capital markets are in trouble, this kind of stuff doesn't help because you've got some of our biggest growth stocks are being turned off at some of our biggest platforms. It's
Yeah,
mad.
100% agreed. 100% agreed. Okay, so let's have a look at some of the movers and shakers of the week. I mean, literally the best performer, undoubtedly, even still, I think it was up over 400%, as I alluded at the top there. UK oil and gas, they're up some 240% on the week. Amazing news on the announcement that its wholly owned subsidiary, UK Energy Storage, executed an MOU with National Gas Transmission, the nation's principal gas pipeline operator, transporting gas to power stations, industries, and 24 million homes. National Gas is developing the National 100% Hydrogen Pipeline System Project Union, aimed at connecting future centres of hydrogen production, storage, and consumption. As I said, up 400% on the day, back on, I think it was Tuesday when they announced it. And then, bam, what did they do? What did they do when it was up
Placing,
400%? They
placing.
did a placing for £3 million. Is
But
that the way to do it, as they
I
say?
don't. Well, the thing is, it's funny because on the one hand, you go, oh, placing at a discount. On the other, you've got a stock rocketing ahead and they need money. I can't really blame them, like,
I mean,
and
if the stock's up 400%, wouldn't you encourage people to accompany the bod to do a raise at that point?
100%, 100%. And also, it's still attractive, it's still liquid. They'll wash through it and hopefully it'll go up again. It would have been
Well,
financially mad not to do it.
you've got to pay Sanderson's wages as well. I'm sure he's half a million quid a year.
I mean
It's
that's a bit different, but still, that just
a
generically,
big business.
if you've got a huge move and the brokers are offering you money and the discount's not too awful, then yeah, I think sometimes you do just have to take the cash, don't you?
Okay,
Leave it.
so from one energy play to another, we've obviously seen energy pathways. They're up some 190% on the news there of obviously the mesh project gaining significance, or a project of national significance, should we say, from Ed Miliband. What do we make on that, on the way it's obviously it rose up to sort of towards the 10 pence mark on the official announcement, and obviously we spoke to Ben earlier in the week, but what do we make of the current position it's sitting in, and any sort of future potential?
Yeah, I think that's obviously fantastic. Section 35, fantastic. I think, when you have these, I don't want to call it binary risk, but it kind of was, where you either get Section 35 or you don't, then, a lot of people breathed a lot of sighs of relief. You have that rocket higher, it's come down a bit. But I mean, it's worth bearing in mind it was at 12p, pre-license, not so long, less than a year ago. So there's a lot of a way to run. And when something's been Section 35, the chance of getting everything awarded is now extremely high. One thing I will note is interesting is that EPAL, there was a contract came out. I'm not sure if you caught this, for $29 million for 10,000 tons of artificial graphite. Energy Pathways has estimated production of 60,000 tons per annum of artificial graphite, and that's just a side business on the asset. So in terms of like the amount of money that could be made there, it's great. And then just in general, just the energy storage, the hydrogen. Everything about that project is something, there's a reason why the Secretary of State, who I and many others written several letters to, have recognized it as a strategically important asset. We need gas storage in the UK. Our gas storage is just a disaster. And setting aside everything else, when you've got the Rough storage facility, potentially getting closed down, you need a replacement as soon as possible. It's in the right place, it's got the right people. We know that private funding at multiples to the current share price had been sorted this time last year, and presumably is still in place when the license comes in. So yeah, it's one, obviously the day traders make their money, but it's one to hold and wait another year or two, and I think you'll be very, very happy.
Have thoughts on EPP?
But yeah, I think I said my piece earlier in the week when we were speaking with Ben, and obviously the stock has done very well on the news of the S35. I think it's going to be a FTSE 350, 250 company within the next 2 or 3 years. If this is politically now has been chosen as a project of significance, then I can't see how it's not going to happen. So it's going to happen. And as it happens, if you actually do the maths purely on the graphite, the figures are phenomenal. I think there was a deal done this week, was it, Charles? 10,000 tons of
As I
graphite.
just said, yeah.
Yeah. So the scenario is that if you multiply that by EPP's optionality to do 60,000 tons, it's like it's mind-blowing. It's
$180
phenomenal.
million, yeah.
And then you've got obviously storage, value of the storage itself. You've got value of the gas itself as it's pumped out. You've got the fact that they can probably help release gas from other places around the UK that they can turn neutral, if you like, in terms of green terms. They've got the opportunity to probably expand beyond Marin. So it won't just be Marin, it could be Marin plus something else. Yeah, I see it now as a very good long-term hold. And I'd like to continue to keep adding, but we'll see how it all adds up. I think people will get it over the next few weeks and realize the size of it.
Good. Sabian Technology SNT up 100% on the week. They provide an update on the partnership with City Oilfield of Korea and affiliate B.GRN following significant announcements in the Korean Times. Bezant up some 35% on the week. Had a good move. They filed a Form 605 notifying that they had ceased to be a substantial holder in Blackstone Minerals. So between the 18th of September and the 1st of October, the company sold 53 million shares at an average of 7 Aussie cents, circa 3.45 pence, generating gross proceeds of 3.75 million Aussie dollars or 1.84 million pounds. What do we make of, firstly, what do we make of the obviously the reduction in their holding there down to circa 80 million shares remaining? What do we make of that? Obviously, it gives them a bit of cash flow going forward, maybe to help with funding towards maybe the plant of where Hope and Gorup, as we talked in the past. But just give us your kind of review of that news, Charles.
Well, they purchased the NLZM plant, didn't they? For very close to that amount of money not so long ago. So that might be there to match it. I'd imagine you don't purchase a plant to process copper and gold unless you plan to process copper and gold in the near future. I don't know. That might be. It's kind of like, do you buy an oven unless you plan on cooking food in it? So my guess is that we're going to get financing for this plant. to the tune of maybe $15 million is what we've kind of guessed in the past. And Collins, you know, kind of he won't say yes to that, but he's not said no either. It's around $15 million to get this thing up and running. Retaining some of those MannKind shares for the upside in that project makes a lot of sense to me, but also because they're no longer a significant holder, they'll be able to sell them out the same way and without any stress on the market as well. But I think that you know, I updated the figures because I did an article on Bazan. I've done a few over the past couple of years, but last year I did one on sort of the upside potential of just the open pit alone. And you were talking at that point sort of $35 million in profit a year. And now, because of the current copper and gold pricing, which, you know, it could go up, it could go down, but you're looking much, much higher. You're looking closer to 60, and you're kind of sitting there. You're going, well, it's still got a $10 million market cap. And I think it's you know, once you get the financing in place, you start building this thing. I think it's the first month of like proper revenue out of this thing, which will probably be next year. The share price is going to go absolutely bananas. Kev, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, much the same. I personally think that the Blackstone shares are going to be used in the whole game. I'm not even sure they're going to wait for the upside in it. I think it's going to probably be used for the overall plan to put it into practice. There's all sorts of different discussions going on from what I can gather, both offtake agreements, which will pay upfront fees, and you know, maybe part of the small part of the project. Finance is coming, I'm sure of it. I mean, I think Colin was intonating to that effect that there are many parties in the data room and discussing it. So I think it's coming, and I don't think it'll be too long. Yeah, the numbers are frightening, really, when you look at the gold price now and the copper price, the actual free cash flow that this will kick off. I think you said in one of the groups yesterday that it will sort of pay for itself in 4 months.
Well, 60 million a year, yeah, it should do, you know.
Actually, it's probably less than 4 months if that's the case, if they're using the Blackstone money as well. So, I mean, you know, you could be talking 3 months, it's gone. And then obviously you still need a cash flow budget. So, but this
Oh,
thing.
that didn't include tax though, to be fair. But
Yeah.
still, regardless, yeah, really,
Yeah.
really quickly.
And this thing's going to be spitting out cash. And I mean, we don't expect the gold price to collapse anytime soon. The copper price doesn't expect to collapse. And actually, there's a lot of problems in the copper market in various different places at the minute,
Grasberg. Yeah,
which are causing, you know, a bottleneck, and hence we're seeing 5 pound or 10,000 plus copper. So, you know, it's almost like a bit of a perfect storm, but don't be put off by the price has gone up like 300% since the start of the year, because it hasn't even reached, like, as you said, 10 million pound market cap. I'm expecting finance that this should be worth about 30 million minimum
And that,
on financing.
and that the other thing I was saying with tax point is that, you know, because the plant or any financing you put in place is an expense of a company, you pay it back out of the revenue without the tax effect, right? Like any other company. So you're going to find like the payback time will be super quick. But I think more broadly, like just, you know, setting Bazant aside for a sec, there's a few other companies like this where you've got a turnkey project, you know, very close to financing. And the market still hasn't woken up to the fact that we have, you know, close to $4,000 gold, or that copper is again back to where it was a few months ago. And everything is priced, even the majors, you know, even the majors that have made sort of 100, 120, 130% this, you know, year to date, they're still incredibly underpriced compared to the margins that we're dealing with at the moment. Like Greatland Resources, you know, my guess, for example, for that one was, you know, if we have gold now above $3,500 US, they'll be able to develop Havieron, you know, without debt. They'll have the money in the bank, you know, within, you know, 9 months from now. That would have been crazy to assume a year, 2, 3 years ago, you know? So this is the thing. We now have this position where you've got loads and loads of gold, copper companies with, you know, assets that are just churning out money or about to churn out money. They're just not being valued properly. Like the other one in the Colin Burr portfolio, African Pioneer, they don't have the Blackstone Mineral shares, sure, but their market cap is less than £3 million. And they have on Gombo, I think it's got 300,000 contained copper at that asset.
I think it's a bit more than that, but yeah.
But yeah, does it matter, you know, at this point? You've
The
got a £3 million market.
license,
You can TR1 in that stock for 80 grand right now,
yeah, but the
you know?
mining license is, I believe, worth between 10 and 15 million US dollars on its own if you don't do another thing, right? So if that is the case, plus you've got a joint venture in Zambia with who are
First
they called?
Quantum.
With First Quantum, that project's got to be worth a few million pounds, let's say 2 or 3 million pounds if it was on its own. And then you've got the licenses in Botswana in very, very good areas.
Sandfire resources.
Yeah, also worth 2 or 3 million pounds. So if we look at that, then the net asset value, I think I put it on one of the groups on Friday, the net asset value of African Pioneer, I believe, is like 0.25. The market cap currently is 0.25 of the NAV, right? That just is immense. That's just insane, right? Even if it goes to the NAV, it goes from 1p to 4p. And Mr. Swan obviously likes it. 13.1% of the company. He's now the biggest shareholder. He's got more than Colin Bird. And he's been lapping them up at 1p on that thesis, on the fact that the share or the actual value of the assets within it, even not using those assets, is vastly undervalued, like vastly.
So is it a case of follow the money, do we think?
I think so. I mean, Bazant, Jonathan's got 6 point something%, as he now, he declared it this week. African Pioneer is the
It's over
same.
a billion shares, isn't he?
Yeah, over 1 billion shares. I mean, 1p is the target for me anyway, personally. 1p, which is still 12 times what it is now. And yeah, he'll have a cool 10 million quid of money if that comes off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice work if you can get it, as they say.
Yeah.
So let's have a look at another one. So Defence Holdings, and obviously you talked a little bit about that at the beginning, Charles, but there was a couple of things I want to talk about. The first one was announced earlier in the week, where they announced their second classified AI product build focused on this edge-based analysis and identification. Obviously follows the launch of Project Ixion in September. The new software-led capability addresses one of NATO's top priorities, which is to enhance real-time identification and decision support in contested and disconnected environments. So what do we make of that news? Obviously, that was the first thing I want to talk about, was just give us a little bit of a kind of analysis of the classified, well, the second product, but also I want to just talk a little bit about Lord Houghton. He of Richmond, he spoke on Friday morning just before we recorded this. What do we make of that? Obviously, there was a lot of information about his kind of early ambitions and change of career. Originally, apparently, wanted to be a barrister, and then he sort of decided after seeing his brother at Sandhurst to obviously move into the military. He talked a lot about his early military career as well, and then his progression as he worked through the becoming a brigadier by the time of the Good Friday Agreement in 90. So it was almost like a history lesson about his kind of career. And then he just talked about his perspective of information as a weapon, cyber defense of critical infrastructure, and then technological military advantage. So just give us your thoughts on those two bits of news.
Yeah, so I think the first thing is with the second classified AI product, a lot of the data is surprise, surprise, classified. So this is the thing with defense technology stocks, even ones that aren't called defense technologies, you have an information war, basically. So you have to take some of the information on faith, and that's going to create volatility in the share price. What you need to understand is that the people building this product are tier one, world-class individuals who could take jobs at any of the Mag 7 with which Defence Holdings, a couple of which Defence Holdings have partnered with no problem at all. So, that's the one thing on that hand. And I think there needs to be like an understanding, we're talking commercialization for the first product in December. This is the second, and there's more going to come in the pipeline. The revenues being generated from them will be decent and solid and strong. And, so we have this massive rocket in the share price, but basically the thing is that there's, yes, you can talk about the OODA loop. We can talk about, radar and acoustic, to improve recognition. But the key point to understand is that these products, they're being dealt with, they're being developed in partnership with the MOD, in partnership with hyperscalers, in partnership with Whitespace. Defence Holdings is going to, come back now when the non-executive chair, and that was an interesting chat he gave on Friday, comes in and, gives his speech, and the share price came down a little bit. Because they were expecting a non-executive chair to provide more information on these products, but he's not
Yeah,
going
we'll
to.
just release a new contract with a non-exec on an X. I mean, what
Yeah,
did
well,
we
it's not going to
expect?
happen. You'll get it's it, that's not the point of that conversation. He was saying I was at and continue to be in the rooms with the top military people in the country. I know exactly what is needed, and what the defense industry needs in the UK for lethal advantage. This is what you need to take away from that you've got the top man, in the military at the top of a company. And but I think my most important thing I would say with Defence Holdings, this is my key takeaway, is that if you're there for like a quick trade, then trade in, trade out, everyone makes a market, that's fine. If you're there for the long term, it is a risk stock with risk capital, which means, you're putting money in that you might lose, as with all risk stocks. However, the upside potential there is absolutely incredible, you know. And so when you look at like the early days of like Palantir, for example, which I compared it to a month or so ago, that thing went up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, right? And now it's, you know, record high. Even I bought Palantir a couple of years ago in 2023, and I covered it for IG Index at the time, and nobody wanted it really at that point, and then it just shot up. So I think when you're talking about these kind of movements in the early days, up, you know, a few hundred percent, down 20, 30%, up, down, up, down, in terms of a growth stock in the public markets, those movements really don't matter if you're there long term. And if you are emotionally affected by, you know, a 20% drop or 20% rise in a day, it's probably not the stock for you.
Probably not for you,
So
yeah.
what is the comparison between Palantir? Because I had an IG interview with Graham there during the week, which he was asked the question, you know, is this the UK's Palantir? So why could it possibly be the UK's Palantir? And what is the market cap of this now compared to what's the market cap of Palantir?
Well, Palantir is in the billions, and this is a market cap. But the key thing to understand is that it's about sovereign AI. So we want to have in the UK for defense sovereign AI that we have complete control over. So when you're working with the hyperscalers, for example, the hyperscalers are walled across in the UK. So, but basically, what you want to have is you want to have artificial intelligence deployed at scale on the battlefield in a wartime setting, which the UK has control over, which a homegrown company has control over. This is the key point. And then Palantir is, you know, obviously it's based in the US, it's the same. That's where your key similarity is it's sovereign artificial intelligence versus commercial artificial intelligence that anybody can use. That's it, basically.
But the one thing that stuck out to me about the announcement this week actually was the fact that they say they're not necessarily just going to deal with the military of defense, but actually NATO. Now, if you're suddenly dealing with NATO as opposed to just the UK military of defense, that's going to be a big deal, no?
Well, it's going to be a huge deal, and it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, one of the people on our board is very aligned with NATO. So yes, obviously it can be massive. It can be massive. But in the same way, basically, the general business case is that, you know, Andy McCartney is going to build a portfolio of sovereign AI-enabled products aligned with SDR25 priorities. And those products, some of them will just be UK focused, others will be embedded with NATO. It's possible that we'll go abroad and start to steal the lunch of other companies, you know, in the US, in Australia. But I think the key thing is Project Ixion, the first product that we know, this misinformation product. Once you have deployed that, you're generating revenue and showing that it works. You then have an entire pipeline of products that you know will validate the business model. And the key thing for me is that when it comes to valuations of these kind of stocks, I mean, when you look at like small caps in general, we tend to value things on revenue and profit and everything else. When you're talking about early stage trailblazer valuations, something like defense holdings can go much, much higher because it's based on the potential. And you'll have people buying defense holding stocks in their ISAs and their SIPs and junior ISAs. And they're just going to buy them and they're not going to look at the share price. They're not going to look at it. They're just going to buy it. They're going to put it away. And if it goes, you know, to the moon, they'll be extremely happy. But they're not, you know, I think this is the thing. Like if you're in a Telegram group, or if you're on Twitter, or if you're on LSE and AVVFN, there's a lot of chatter and conversation constantly. There's also a large number of people who've just bought shares in the stock that are just going to sit on it for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and if you look at the comparison, we're looking now at a company that's worth, I think, 80, 90 million pounds
Yeah.
at the current market cap. Palantir is worth $443.56 billion. So let's say 300 billion pounds. If Defence Holdings becomes 1% of what Palantir is, it will have a £3 billion market capitalization, if that is the case. So is that worth the risk?
Well, yeah, I think it definitely is. And, you know, and for example, here's a good one. So I first covered Palantir with IG on the 22nd of February 2022. At that point, Palantir was worth $10. It then fell further when I next covered it to $7. This was in June 2022, so a few months later. So you had a 30% fall in that time, right? So we were at $7 in June 2022. And then Palantir shares now are at $187 a couple of years later. So you have this situation where, you know, I think that's kind of really key to understand. That stock, when I first bought it, I had to sit through a 30 and at some points 40, 50% loss before it rocketed higher.
This is a
So,
snapshot in time, isn't it? If
yeah,
you've got to look at
100%.
it, this is a snapshot in time. If you look at it in 6 months, hopefully it'll be, significantly higher. It may, and in between that time, there'll be ups and downs like a roller coaster. But ultimately, if they can deliver the tech that they say they're going to deliver, they can deliver the contracts that we think they're going to deliver, then it will be significantly higher in 6 months and in a
Yeah,
year.
exactly. And I think the key thing is if you once that product is revenue generating, I've always said this in, in my I say this all the time in on these podcasts. To stay listed, you need around 1 million a year, right? For them to develop these products, they'll need a few million a year. So if you get that first product announcement and say it's 10 million a year, that covers all of their cost base. And then the risk evaporates and then the sentiment will be really, really strong.
And if you
So
look at some of these recent defense contracts that have been posted online, 300 million isn't unusual for a defense contract.
no, not at all. And I think that once you prove that your first product works, right, and there's initial contracts. To be honest, I'm not certain what the monetary value will be. But once you get those first contracts in, once you prove that they work, the upscaling of them, because they're built to be scaled, but they're built with hyperscalers. That's why you have, pretty much all but guaranteed now. Google is in the room with them, with VMED, with Whitespace, with Defense Holdings, building these products together. And that's, in my mind, that's because you've got Andy McCartney building these products himself. And yeah, I think we're onto a winner.
Good.
A light long-term hold, as you said. I don't think it's a trade, is it? Let's be honest.
No. Okay, let's have a look at some of the shakers because we kind of neglected a few. The biggest one is litigation capital management. Don't know massive about them. They're down some 58%. Then following up, we've got Mast Energy Developments, 57 down. Do we know any reason? I mean, I saw there was a bit of a drop in the week, but I've no idea what there was talk about some warrants being exercised.
Yeah,
Is that
the warrant holders. I mean, they're the ones who gave the money to put the money in for the warrant holders, right? As simple as that. So they're making money hand over fist on these warrants. So they're going to sell them. They've sold a bunch. Now I think it'll start to recover again. They are not allowed to hold more than 2.99% of the capital of the company. So
okay.
in effect, they can only hold, as it stands at the minute, with I think 31 million shares in issue, about a million shares. Okay. Now, if you look at what's happened, they have basically sold significantly more than that, probably because they still had some from the previous time, but they had to get rid of them because they can't hold more than 2.99%. I envisage that you will see next week that this will recover again because it's in their interest that the price goes higher so they make more money. So I would suggest you'll see a pause now in sales. And it will then appreciate again. So it's becoming a bit of a trade, to be honest, rather than the underlying. Though we did speak to Peter during the week, and it looks fantastic. 1 gigabyte into AI centers. When we first started talking about this a year plus ago, it was 300. Well, it was really 100 megawatts. Then 300 megawatts was the goal. Now you could be talking about 1 gigawatt into the AI centers. And the beauty about the AI center thing is that he's got the AI centers coming to him to discuss, and they've got the finance. So they're going to be helping the whole thing finance. So it could well be that Mast gets a huge amount of megawatts without really putting very much money in themselves, which is obviously going to be a much easier way and better way to scale up. So I think the business itself has become, better and better and better. The warrants have a fixed time period as well. There's only 3 months left of the warrants. And then they're finished. They're no longer applicable. I don't think all of the warrants that can be cashed in, it is now possible for them to be cashed in. So I expect it to go back. I really do. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't.
Good. And then we also saw an interesting one that moved pretty well in over the last 2 weeks was Genflow Biosciences. They obviously are down 40% on the week after announcing a raise, a quite heavily discounted raise as well. Yeah, we had Premier African Minerals down 30% as well on the week. Again, I don't really know much about that. What's the latest on Prem? Is it a finished stock, Charles, or not?
No, to be honest, I think the thing is basically it's just the perennial, they need more money and the plant, needs to work. I think when you look at like the RNSs over the past few years, it's, lithium plant update, lithium plant update. They need to just put more and more money into it. And the lithium market is incredibly depressed. I mean, the flip side of that is that this what they have out there is one of the largest lithium pegmatites in Zimbabwe, possibly in the world. And the plant, the actual value of the assets that they have on the book is way more than what the market cap of a company is. But really, I think what you need at that asset is you need lithium prices to recover, and you need somebody to come in with a massive capital injection, and then it would recover. But as it stands, it's been 2 years of delays, as simple as that.
Sure. Okay, markets. Gold obviously trading up around the 3,800, 338.50, 3,860, whatever you want to say. It's done very well. Seems to be, constantly testing all-time highs or breaking through and setting new records. Silver currently around the sort of 47, 47 and a quarter mark. FTSE 100 near, again, FTSE 100 seems to, every week breaks the new record high. Recently closed around the 94.46. As we record this, it's currently at 94.92. S&P 500 at 67.15 and Nasdaq at 24.892. So what do we make of the first thing? Let's take a look at metals, precious metals.
I think it's
Higher, higher, higher.
wonderful. That's Kev's, very educated view. I would say basically you've got three stores of value, right? You've got precious metals like gold, silver, platinum. That's one. You've got US dollar. I think you could make an argument for Swiss francs and various other country currencies, but basically it's the US dollar. And you've got Bitcoin. I would say those are the three stores of value. I don't think anyone could argue. You could argue whether those are stores of value, but you can't argue that those are the three people would, put their money into. Now, you have a world where inflation is high, equities are at record highs, bonds are, delivering pretty handsomely as well. It's very difficult to find a safe place to put your money. Now, the US dollar just continues to crash, and Trump seems to want to make it continue to fall. Whether that's a good idea or not is neither here nor there. If he decides to revalue the $1 trillion gold pile that the US currently has, which I think is something that will almost certainly happen in the next couple of years, that'll make the US dollar even worse off. So you can't move money into US dollars and retain your capital. If you put it into Bitcoin, yes, Bitcoin is rising now, but it's tricky with Bitcoin because even though it's been the best performing asset of the past 15 years or so, it is incredibly volatile. So as a store of value, if you want to retain that value in like a market downturn, as in you want to access that capital at that point, that can be tricky to use. So people are going into gold. But it's not just people, it's not just individuals, it's central banks. All of the central banks are buying gold at record pace and have done for the past 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and they're all dumping dollars. So this is a shift, in my view, in global macro central bank move that says we don't want to hold dollars, we want to hold gold instead. Okay, because we think the gold, that the dollar is gonna slide in valuation. And we were talking about this before we started, weren't we? About stocks, about gold, about bonds. What would you want to hold at the minute? Or Bitcoin? What would you want to hold at the minute? The answers are, I'd quite like to hold gold. Stocks, I need to be very picky. And would you like to have US denominated stocks? Probably not. In terms of Bitcoin, well, it's becoming more real, isn't it? Even though it's not real. I'm sorry for saying it. It's just becoming more real. Like people are giving it the real worth, the real world worth, in a similar way as gold is getting it, but it's not the same.
Well, it's I mean, my personal view is that gold along a block settled along a blockchain is the future. But I think in terms of blockchain technology, Bitcoin, I think it's just a lack of education and understanding in the UK. The fact that, for example, the FCA is now lifting the ban on Bitcoin ETNs from the 8th of October, you have this kind of like, I have to be careful what I say here, but you have this situation with Bitcoin where there's a lot of individuals that think it will just go to zero at some point, but it just continues to go higher.
Punching
Now,
through high now at the
yeah, well,
moment.
I think the big thing is
I
what.
genuinely don't agree with that philosophy. I think it could go to the moon, and it could also stay where it is, and it could also drop
Well,
significantly.
it could drop
But half in
significantly,
value.
but as it has done in the past and then recovered, like, so the idea there won't be any crypto winter in the future, I think, is for the birds. But I do think that, but my personal perspective anyway is that with gold, with silver, with Bitcoin, with those three assets particularly, I have a set and forget it policy. I buy some every month, as you know, regardless of price.
Don't know, but do know now. Coming
Oh
round your house.
no, but you did. This is okay. But this is the thing. I just every month, or maybe not every month, because I'm not that disciplined. But just every so often, regardless of what the price is, I just buy some. because it's an insurance policy. And the irony is, had I just bought gold at the age of 18 and just bought that, I probably would have outperformed most of the stocks
Yeah,
I've ever picked.
everything.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Well, I've got, and I know you're crypto-wise, you can't say too much. So, but the guest we had on last week, Paul, with Amazing AI, okay, he's now going to take his own £5 million loan and basically get put and call options to invest in around about £500 million worth of Bitcoin. Okay, now for me, this is like Smarter Web Company on steroids, because the reality is the only thing that has to happen for this to be successful is volatility within the Bitcoin space, within the Ethereum space, within whatever. He was talking also about maybe doing it in the Trump coin as well. So the only thing that has to happen is volatility. So a general question for you, Charles, do you think the crypto markets will be volatile?
The question is, how do you define volatile? Crypto is as an asset always been volatile. But your problem is that there's two theses, right, going forward. Let's talk Bitcoin in particular, having a process. So there's two ways of looking at it. Either if you look at the price chart of Bitcoin since its inception in, start of 2009, it's been incredibly volatile, going up, going down, going up, going down. And now we're at around $120,000 US. Is that a record high given the US, dollar value has fallen? It's not quite yet. It depends on your perspective. But is Bitcoin now an asset where everybody from individuals all the way up to institutions and even governments are going to start stockpiling it? That Sweden was talking about stockpiling it this week. And therefore, there won't be that much volatility. It'll just be people averaging in over time. Or is it effectively a leveraged bet on the NASDAQ and US tech stocks and relies on that sentiment? And that's an incredibly difficult
Or
question to answer.
is it going to
Or,
behave differently because less and less bitcoins are being created?
and also more and more Bitcoins are being held by individuals who aren't going to sell them. Like the Zinks character that we interviewed not so long ago, regardless of
Yeah,
your,
Bitcoin Treasury are buying a lot, which takes a lot of them and holds them in,
They
into
do, they do.
diamond
But then
caps.
again, it's the same as the gold issue, right? Because I'm trying to think of the words. Let's say we have like a massive global crash, right? And I'm not saying that there definitely will be one, but if there is one in the next 1, 2, 3 years, let's say all of your stocks are down 50% in your whole, are you going to sell those? Probably not. Your house has, dropped by 40% in value. Are you going to sell that? Probably not. The only things that are rising in value because they're stores of value will be gold and Bitcoin. And maybe silver. So do you have a
Silver.
so do you sell yeah so do you sell your highly liquid valuable assets to cover yourself during the downturn? And this is the thing, because we've not had, I mean, my personal view is, everyone says it's different this time. These valuations that we have on the US tech stocks are just unbelievable. And if
The
you look,
bananas,
well,
bananas.
and they're all booking, if you look at the Nvidia, Oracle, bloody Google, like the circle of financing, they're
I
all
know the
financing each
circle
other.
of life.
Nvidia's
So
at like Nvidia's at 4.5 trillion now, isn't it? Which is
four point
incredible.
six even, isn't it?
4.6. So I just want to just ask one thing about, because we heard on the 1st of October that the Fed, a federal government, shut down after Congress failed to pass the funding legislation. And apparently there's like 800,000 federal workers have been furloughed, and I think 700,000 more are continuing to work without pay. And obviously that's going to have a knock-on effect. The US government shutdown is going to raise the fears of a weaker economic data, which is obviously usual fiscal stress and policy risk. So that's going to move capital towards the safe haven assets, you say,
Well,
gold, Bitcoin. But what do we make of what's going on out there at the moment with this government shutdown?
it's funny how no one's really cared this time around, and because the US debt system situation and deficit is so unsustainable, there just seems to be this sort of like, it's kind of like, when you meet a younger person who says, "I'll never own a house. I'll never own a house. It's impossible. So I'm just going to spend all my money, and who cares?" That's what the US feels like at the moment. They're in so much debt, the deficit is so high. I don't see what their solution is out of it. If you look at like the way that this shutdown interacts with like Bitcoin prices or gold prices or equity prices, for example, when the government shuts down initially, if you've seen it in the Bitcoin price, that weighs on the US dollar, right, which has already fallen, because people will view Bitcoin as a better store of value given fiat currency weakness. But if the shutdown goes on too long, right, those monthly employment and inflation figures that come out that are funded by the government, they won't come out anymore. So the Federal Reserve won't be able to cut interest rates, because they've made it very clear they'll only cut based on a database decision. So if you get to the point where those statistics aren't coming out, you're not going to get any interest rate cuts. Interest rate cuts tend to feed into Bitcoin price rises, but also, Nasdaq tech stocks tend to rise. So the longer the shutdown goes on, initially it's great for stocks and equities and Bitcoin, but if it goes on for too long, it'll be a problem because the rates can't get cut as you're going into a potential US recession.
The circle of life continues.
$15 billion a week in GDP losses, they reckon this court is.
So what you're telling me is if Nvidia share price goes up 1%, it's just gone up £450 million.
Dollars, but yeah.
Dollars, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. But the thing is, it hasn't. This is
rookie numbers.
Right. You need to understand this is really important, right? It's really important because no one ever seems to bloody understand this, even but it's not. When people say it's worth $4.6 trillion, it's not like there's $4.6 trillion sitting around to buy Nvidia stock. It means that somebody out there is prepared to buy at the daily volume of Nvidia at $190 a share.
Right.
No one's coming to buy.
But they say that in cars, it's worth what someone's willing to pay, Charles.
100%.
Yeah. Okay, so
okay, let's flip that around. Yeah. Let's say somebody tried to sell 5% of Nvidia. What would that do to the share price?
It would be at $100.
Yeah, like it's the same. It's almost ironically, it's the same as the penny stocks right at the very bottom, just on the other extreme level.
Yeah, that's
there
true.
Are stocks that we all hold where if we sold our position, it would drop 20% in a day.
20, you know? maybe more.
Maybe more.
Fred,
yeah.
I've got another, what I believe is going to be the store of wealth for the future, and you will all take copies of this in the future.
Is it your wallet fund, Kev?
Let me just record and hold button on this one.
I believe that Tau is going to be the next Bitcoin. Now, if I believe that, maybe I'm in the minority right now, but having watched some videos and stuff like that, we've got Tiger Investment or whatever, Tiger Intelligence, we've got Astra, who've also got a subnet. What do people believe? Because I genuinely believe that the decentralized AI is going to be better, faster, and more accurate than the big language models. And if that is the case, and these subnets get stuck in, effectively start earning Tau, just like we mine Bitcoin, okay, that those companies could be the, the masters of the future. Maybe there's much bigger ones in the US. I don't know. I'm only quoted what I know of, which is Tiger and Astra, who hold Tau and hold subnet in the UK market. I genuinely believe now that I think this is the future. You've got Tau at $300, $330 a coin. And a prediction that if it follows the same route and possibly even better than Bitcoin, that by 31, I think it is, or 32, Tau should be $62, $62,000 a coin. There's silence in the room.
So I was just reading the newspaper there, mate. I was sort of glazed
okay,
over.
Okay, well, in 5 years' time, you'll all look back and go, flip, I wish I had some Tau.
Yeah, I think it's got a purpose, got a use. There's a definite general use case for it. But whether or not it's going to be adopted by the masses and become the next big thing, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
It's basically Bitcoin for the developers. So the people who are actually doing the work in AI are going to be the ones that benefit the most from it. And
again, it's how well it's adopted. That's
no, I agree. But even if it's only adopted tenfold and Tau goes to $3,000 instead of, the figures I've just quoted, surely that's going to exponentially increase the value of these companies. Go on, Charles, have the last word.
Again, I think generically, Tau has promise. I would say the key thing to be aware of, particularly if you're investing in specific subnets, some will do incredibly well potentially, others, might even get delisted. So the subnets in question, that's really important to pay attention to. Whether Tau comes up to challenge Bitcoin or to, or even the kind of numbers that Cap was saying, that's speculative. But it is an asset which is growing from strength to strength, and there's a lot of eyes on it. So we shall see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to challenge Bitcoin. It's going to fill a different place than Bitcoin. And that's, I mean, again, if people had been talking about Bitcoin 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, we'd all be going, oh, what the hell's this? Why would you do that? Why would you do that in 2015? How many doubters were there in Bitcoin? Hundreds of thousands, if not millions. So, yeah, I'm putting it out there. Could be wrong. As I have been many times before. But Byzant, super duper. And just to let you know, seven of the 12 stocks we picked at the start of this year have now at least done 100% return.
That's good.
And six of those seven have done 200% or more.
Done. That's
Well, that's
great.
very reasonable.
Good news. Yeah, very reasonable in this market. So, okay, I think we've waxed lyrical long enough there. I think if you like what you've heard, please subscribe, hit the bell icon for further notifications of future episodes. And yeah, have a great weekend all. And yeah, we'll be back soon.
Buy some tau.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.